Welcome to the Prepared Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Austin, and welcome back for many of you, and welcome in if this is your very first time checking us out. Happy to have you aboard as we revisit a pretty common topic. I think I've done this a couple times on the pod, and I usually like to do it around the beginning of New Year's because you can kind of take everything you learned over the past 12 months and apply it to this ever-present topic of discussion, which is being a modern Minuteman, right? And that's like an overused phrase. It's an exaggerated phrase. It's a kind of annoying phrase in some instances, but I'm gonna spend some time talking about it because at the time this is released, I will actually be out in Las Vegas for my first ever attendance of SHOT Show. So really, really looking forward to that. Really looking forward to connecting with some awesome people. But before I forget, because I am absolutely terrible about this, I'm going to ask you guys to hit the pause button. Make sure you guys are subscribed on all of our major platforms. So head on over to Instagram, head on over to YouTube, and of course, whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. Do me a favor and please make sure that you are subscribed because it does a huge, huge thing for us and helps push us up in algorithms and helps grow some numbers so that we're able to keep this going through sponsor support and things like that. It's, you know, it's just how it works. You know, this is 2026. This is probably not new to you guys, but if you would please consider doing that, throwing us some support, showing us some love, it'd be a really, really awesome thing for me, for us here at Prepared Mindset. So would really love that. And speaking of support and supporters of the podcast, we do have a presenting sponsor for this episode that, I have to say a huge thank you to, because without them, without the support over the last couple of years from them, honestly, this project probably would not have made it as far as it has so far. And with that, I want to make sure I say thank you to the entire team over at Custom Night Vision. You guys, Custom is located out in Houston, Texas, down south, and they're a terrific group of dudes making some really, really awesome products, or assembling some awesome products rather, and bringing night vision, right? One of the best capabilities that we can add as quote unquote modern Minutemen or prepared citizens, or, you know, prepared civilians or dirty civilians, whatever have you, right? You can head over to their website, CustomNightVision.com. And you can, you don't have to take my word for it, but you can see all the great stuff they have in stock. And at prices that will, to be completely honest with you, probably beat the pants off of most of the competitors in the market. They do a fantastic job maintaining those prices and making sure that they're bringing those tools and those solutions to folks like you and I at the best possible rate that they can, honestly. So whether that's a PVS-14, which is the entryway to night vision that everybody starts with, it seems like, or you're moving up to a set of dual tubes, right? So Smarin VGs, right? Fixed bridge, because you want maximum rugged durability, or maybe something like the MH1s from Lloyd Innovations. I look forward to connecting with those guys. I think actually the Custom Night Vision team will be at the Low Light Innovations booth at SHOT Show this year. If you guys are attending or in the area trying to attend and want to come check everything out. But if you head on over to the website, again, it's CustomNightVision.com. You can check out on the homepage that they have two blue buttons. One is a monocular builder, one's a binocular builder. So one tube or two, and you can go ahead and actually build out your dream night vision setup. That's right. To your specs, to your wants, your desires, to almost any degree, right? You can pick the kind of lenses and optics that you want on the device. You can pick, obviously, the housing you want. Yes, the intensifier tubes. So whether you're looking at, you know, some just maximum budget NNVT stuff, or you want to grab some L3 commercial tubes before the market completely dries up, they have everything imaginable there. And they can even help you package up a helmet, mounts, lasers, all kinds of good stuff to help save you some coin. Again, head over to CustomNightVision.com. You guys, let them know that Austin from Prepared Mindset sent you guys over. They're going to take fantastic care of you. So super grateful to work with those guys, a bunch of really stellar human beings, Ben, Trevor, Kevin, the whole crew. But let's just dive into it, man. You know, I think this is, like I said, it's a topic we've covered a couple different times. And I think it's something that as we look at the landscape of the world, because I think this can be a relative discussion, right, to the level of violence and our relative level of concern for safety that we perceive in our own day-to-day personal lives. So for instance, right, like I was getting my hair cut on Thursday and, you know, talking about the podcast and making the trip out to Vegas and everything to attend SHOT. And I think it's probably a safe assumption. My haircut lady, she's a super wonderful woman. Very, very nice. Does a really good job for me with the hair I have left anyway. And, I think she leans a little bit left side of things, but she's cool. So I don't hate for it. Right. and just talking about some of that stuff, and asked about what's, you know, have I talked on the podcast about what's going on in Minneapolis with, obviously, I think the lady's name was Renee Good, if I'm recalling correctly, and the shooting by a ICE agent, which by initial evaluations of the evidence, right, it seems that it was justified, right? Now, I haven't, and I'm not saying that because I think there's a doubt there necessarily. I say that because I try not to pass critical judgment based off of the court of social media. I try to, at least personally, look at multiple camera angles, look at a lot of facts, talk to people who might have insight, and ask for their clarification on it, because I think we have a lot of internet lawyers that that will misconstrue, misinterpret, or just straight out lie about different policies and laws and things like that. I've seen everything from people saying, oh, you don't have to listen to ICE because they're a federal agency and you are a state citizen. And it's like, that's not how that works. I'm not an attorney, but I'm fairly certain that's not how that works, ma'am. But by all means, Karen, you carry on, you do you. And, you know, we look at that, and if you're listening and looking or living, I'm sorry, in the Minneapolis area, you probably have some pretty high concerns for what the world could bring to your doorstep, right? The quote-unquote peaceful protesting, we now, I think, I saw something today being shared around by, I think it was like Patriot One News on Facebook. I've never even heard of them before. I should have just said like a media outlet, if you want to call it that. But, oh, the Black Panthers have reactivated and are now going to stand against ICE. And, of course, it's a bunch of, you know, Black Americans, right, wearing Temu-branded soft armor carriers with no armor in them. And then, like, oh, MNP-22s with, you know, irons with the rear one flipped down. And, you know, all kinds of just goofy stuff where it's like it's a show of force. It's very performative and dramatic. But will it ever amount to anything? I mean, probably not. But when we look at overall preparedness, right, we shouldn't plan based off of what we, you know, hope will happen or think might happen, right? Hoping isn't a plan. It's actually, in my opinion, it's the absence of a plan is what you have with hope, right? But, you know, okay, like, nevertheless, concern there, right? Because enough things are happening, enough protests are happening, we're seeing enough people getting involved in intermixed or, I guess, entangled, there's a good word, right? Entangled with law enforcement, both at the, mostly in Minneapolis at the federal level with ICE, right? I did see another number that was shared. It's like, oh, 24 Minneapolis cops have resigned and 18 of them ended up joining up with ICE. So you have good people that are trying to do good work and they aren't feeling this. What that tells me is they're not feeling the support from from their elected officials and leadership, which, again, as a civilian, where you get your finger on the pulse, right, in your own cities, your own neighborhoods, right, you have rapidly deteriorating support from local law enforcement, right, you have drastically increasing levels of tension due to this, you know, the left versus right, essentially, conflict that just seems like we can't get away from it since Donald Trump got into office. And that's not me throwing shade at Donald Trump, I'm just saying as an observation, it has been left versus right for the last 10 years. It has, like it or not, people have become very inflamed and tensions have become very, very high over the last, you know, 10 years because he got voted in 2016. We're in 2016, so just about 10 years now, and it's rough, man. So when we talk about the overall prospect, the overall idea of armed civilian capability, and we like to use this term modern Minuteman, which I first heard from Lucas Botkin a number of years ago, and everybody really... really bought into that, right? Because a lot of us, I think, resonate with the concept of an armed citizen militia, like when our country was founded, right? A Minuteman was somebody who could, you know, fire a shot and reload within a minute and fire the next shot, which now we've had rapid developments in technology where we can do way better than that, right? And I think that's the term that a lot of people really try to relate to and identify with when we talk about in the event that we have turbulent situations, we have violent uprising of our peers or our, you know, neighbors, right? Whatever term you want to use in our city, those of us who would respond and react. Now, what I will say is that my first question with all of it is, are you going to respond and react in a way you're going to go fight against a unified force, right? So are all of the I don't know, is there going to be like some kind of weird political grouping that comes together, tries to take control of a city, and then you're going to be one of the Minutemen that responds to fight against that? Because that's what happened in the Revolutionary War, and where that term really comes from, that we all try to align with and resonate with. I'm not trying to poo-poo on the idea. I'm just trying to add some valuable and I think critical context to the term and the discussion here. because truthfully, I think most of us, our greatest point of focus and concern needs to be our own families. Like, first and foremost, if your home is not secured and you do not have any relative perception on the safety of your family, like, hey, do you think that there's any idea or any way at all that your wife is going to be able to defend your home, or at least herself, let alone if you have kids or whatever, right? Is she going to be able to defend them, hold the homestead, so to speak, in the event that somebody would wander by? Not saying come under, like, you know, attack from an organized force. I'm saying if, you know, a pair of ne'er-do-wells were to wander upon the homestead, would she be able to, you know, step out with a rifle and dispatch those evil men if necessary? If the answer to that is no, then I think she has more work to do, and or you do, if she's not someone who wants to step into that role. That's something you guys have to figure out as a family. But don't, like, under-prioritize your home. I think sometimes it becomes very romantic, or very romanticized, right? The idea of just throwing on a plate carrier, grabbing your AR-15 you bought from Palmetto State Armory and go jump on the front lines. But it's not that anymore. You know what I mean? Guerrilla warfare is the method of the day. So it won't be like, what the fuck is that movie? The Patriot with Mel Gibson, you know, where it's organized warfare and fighting in open fields and very little, what I would say today, by today's terms, would be urban combat necessarily. It'd be the flip. It'd be a lot of combat in urban areas and very little open area fighting, just given, at least I can speak to that based off of where I live, the demographics, the area where I live, where you have to drive, I mean, on the freeway, so you're doing 70 miles an hour for about a good 20, 25 minutes before you're getting to any sorts of area that have any large areas of open field. And the one that I'm thinking of specifically, as you're moving down 94, it's only open because it's all land owned by the Air National Guard base, by Selfridge Air National Guard base. Otherwise, it probably would have been knocked. It would have been clear cut. It would have been developed decades ago, really, because there's a lot of land there. And as soon as you get on the other side of the freeway, yes, it's all developed. There's industrial complexes. There's storage yards. There's shopping. All kinds of stuff there. So that would really be the one area, which I don't know how involved the military might become in that conflict, depending on which side is which and who's fighting for what and whatnot. So, I mean, there's a lot of variables at play when we have this overall discussion of the modern Minuteman, where you're responding and reacting to, how organized are you? And the other thing, too, this came up in a comment section of one of my videos is, you know, militias are illegal in, I'm pretty sure, all 50 states, which is fucking funny because I'm pretty sure it's guaranteed as a right by the Second Amendment, which shouldn't surprise anyone, right? Because half of the gun laws we have in this country are unconstitutional and a clear obstruction, if not all gun laws. You know, and we've been hearing for years, right, from politicians, oh, we need to abolish the Second Amendment because it's just, you know, outdated. And it's like, no, fuck you. we're not doing that. But I digress. I don't want to take this down the political rabbit hole. What I want to talk about is the concept, like where we're at in 2026 with the concept of being a prepared civilian and a quote unquote modern Minuteman. Now, if you're working with a group of individuals, that changes your role. It changes your capability because as a singleton operator, right? And that's a newer term. I think the period correct term was Minuteman back in the 1776 era, right? Today, we would probably call that some kind of an operator. You know, I'm not saying that because I necessarily agree with it. I actually kind of find it cringy. I just think when you look at things and put it in terms of common speak, you know, a solo operator is probably more what you would expect to hear in 2026. As a solo operator, your effectiveness is going to be very low. And in that regard, that's why a lot of people seek out training groups today. They look for opportunities, right, to connect with like-minded individuals. Unfortunately, we have this weird problem where, like, half the fucking people in the 2A space are fucking weirdos here. And, I'm sure that's not unique to Michigan. But if you're one of these guys who you just like spew anti-government propaganda all the time, if, you know, you want to go out and, you know, you want to operate based solely off of, you know, you don't want to know anybody's real name. You got to have code names and call signs for everything. You have to have a specific and given rank structure for stuff. I'm just trying to like list off, and I'm not saying any of these things on their own individually are bad. I'm just saying when you get all of these together, it starts to become like a really nice chemical equation for total like ass fuckery. Funny mustaches. That seems to be a thing, and or beards, right? Not saying that having a beard is bad because everybody wants to look like an operator, of course. And I would never, as a man with a beard, because I don't have much hair on the top of my head anymore, I would never shun, my brothers of facial hair. But, the extreme love for the M81 camo pattern, you know, God's plaid. I can't fucking stand it. It's always the weirdest people that have the obsession with that camo pattern, by the way. And that's not to say it's not effective, right? It's just like the weirdest guys gravitate towards it. And it's usually because it can be had very cheap at surplus stores. So I think the more what you should be looking for as a modern Minuteman, I think multicam for most people who take this seriously, right? Because multicam cannot be found very readily in at least in the area I'm at, in the two or three surplus stores that I have immediate access to within a reasonable drive. You don't find a whole lot of multicam. You do get some like chocolate chips or the desert camo stuff from like the 90s, right? Think like Desert Storm era. You get some of that. You get a fuck ton of M81, just an absolute fuck ton. And then you get that weird digi camo that the Air Force uses. I don't even fucking remember what it's called. It's basically useless. You're supposed to be able to like lay down on some gravel on an airfield and blend in from above. And I don't even know if that's fucking true. That's what I was told by a couple people, and I'm like, well, that makes as much fucking sense as anything else, because this shit does not fucking work out in the woods at all here. But I did just do a video on, because we're talking about gear here for a second, I did just do a video on plate carriers, you know, slick versus structural. Again, it was very popular for like the last 7 years, 6 years here, whatever. It's a modern Minuteman. You had to go out and buy the T-Rex AC-1 or some other kind of slick carrier, clip in a placard to it and throw on a backpack, and that was it, you know, with your, 16-inch rifle and an ACOG, and that was the modern Minuteman load-up. It was super capable and effective, and then you could, like, you know, have your concealed carry Glock 17 or whatever you're carrying in your waistband or on your waistband, and then you were good to go. And, you know, hey, I'll say that can be a effective fighting loadout. Would it be what I wanted to go into any kind of skirmish with? Not me personally. No. Would I take it? Yeah. I mean, sure. I fucking hate the ACOG and I'm not a big fan of slick carriers for reasons which I went into in that video. And if you haven't, I'll take a moment here, you know, shameless plug. If you haven't gone and watched that video on the YouTube channel, please go check it out and subscribe. Because I'm trying to get into this depth of conversation on some key topics as we kick off the new year. So things like slick carriers versus structural. At the time of this recording, I actually just dropped a fighting handgun video talking about how and why I set up certain handguns and the importance of like keeping your internal stock. But go check out the channel, you guys. Go subscribe to that. Drop a comment. Tell me you hate me. All those good things. I don't think that a slick carrier is the best idea because, you know, the overall goal that everyone looks for, right, is let's go find a group of dudes to work with. Okay, so when shit hits the fan, as everyone loves to say, right, we want to have a coordinated plan of where we're all going to rally. We get all of our families together, you know, this person's a mechanic, he's going to bring that skill set, that person's a doctor or an EMT, they'll bring that skill set, the wives can cook or sew or what any combination thereof, right? You know what I mean? Like you have a group of people who all bring something unique to the table, even if it's a matching skill set to somebody else, but you're proficient and reliable, that in and of itself and your own like physical ability to fight or work are all valuable things that you can bring to that discussion, right? Everyone's looking for a group, which is why I always found it fucking weird that people were like setting up their gear to operate as a singleton, i.e. a slick carrier that is limited in what it can carry and limited in what it can do for a team, which is why I like, you know, the structural plate carrier, the FCPC that I run with. In the event that I had to do anything, I do regularly train. And when I say regularly, it's like every week or every 2 weeks, I am working with the same group of people, you know, relatively. So yes, having a back panel on the carrier with bangs in it makes fucking sense for me. And if you're working with people on a regular basis, then I would hope that you set up your kit with some sort of similar mindset, some kind of similar approach where, hey, as an SOP, we're all mounting our med kits on the back of our belts, like lower back. Is that the best way to do it? I don't fucking know. If you want to mount it somewhere else, mount it somewhere else, but make sure everybody has them in the same places. So in the event that somebody takes a round or, you know, shrapnel or overpressure, or they slip and bang their head off something, like, you know where to get medical supplies on any person when you walk on up on them. And that's like some real shit. Like, that's not even like a combat thing. Like, that's just a real good idea when you're talking about group planning. And again, everyone wants to have their own opinion thrown into this conversation. You know, oh, slit carriers are great because I love the elastic cummerbund. Like, or cummerbund. Jesus, now I sound like the people in those videos. I don't really love the elastic as much as I used to, personally, just my opinion. Do they keep the carrier secure to your body? Yeah. And some of them have little pockets sewn into them. Some of them don't. And can it work? Yeah. I mean, sure, it can fucking work. Is it my personal preference? Is it what I use? No, you know, I want side armor, and I want to be able to carry a heavier load if I need to. And here's the thing, that should be dependent on what you anticipate encountering in terms of resistance, in terms of an aggressor force, right? Do you anticipate to have 20 guys attack your home? Or do you live in the middle of suburbia where you have a bunch of neighbors close together where maybe you guys can block off ends of the street and band together and help secure the area yourself? And now you're not a force of, you know, 3 or 4, you're a force of like 20 and, you know, or 8, 10, 12, 20, whatever, and can secure that area for, you know, a dedicated or extended rather amount of time. I don't know. Your situation is your situation. You should plan accordingly. And then you should, from that planning, right? Because the planning needs to come first. If you're building your gear and your kit first and then planning backwards, like, yeah, you're going to have some overlap, but chances are you're going to find a bunch of holes and you're going to have to change up your kit or change up your plan or some combination thereof. So I would understand and identify what your area of operation is and then try to plan for some kit things after that. That's, if you look at military action, even law enforcement, you figure out your mission, right? You gather your intelligence and get all the information together that's pertinent to that action that you can, and then you go load up your kit, like, based off of what you need. Hey, there's no doors where we're going. Does that mean, like, so am I going to bring a fucking breaching shotgun? Probably not, because if we know that there's no doors where we're going, you know, and I don't know what that would fucking be, but if there's no doors, that means that there's no breaching anticipated, and I'm not going to bring that. Like, may I still pack a breaching bar or a Halligan or something? Like, yeah, maybe, or some bolt cutters if there's a fence or a gate or something like that, but am I going to bring a breaching shotgun? No, I'm not going to do that. So when I hear things, you know, that don't make sense, it really bugs me because it shows that given all of the information and all of the military experience that we have floating around and rolling around in this community, there's still a lot of bad information being passed off by people who are quote-unquote experts. And trust me, bro, I was in the Marines. I know. And it's bad information. And people are reading this stuff either in blogs or watching it in videos or posts in the comment section. I had somebody tell me, and here's the thing, I'm not like trying to rip on anyone, and I'm not saying that if it works for you, it's a bad idea. If it works for you, then it works for you, and that's what's important. But I refuse to believe, right? Because I used to get shit in videos where people said you need to have 7 mags on you because that's the minimum infantryman's fighting load. And I understand why in a military context, in a military-based conversation. But then I get people who would say, I have 11 loaded magazines on my plate carrier. I'm like, fuck me, dude. 11? Like, I struggle to find a way to figure out how to do 6 plus 1 in the gun, honestly. Like, I have 4, and I think that's good for me. Not talking about the belt, right? And then this guy continues to say, I have an additional 2 pistol mags and 3 rifle mags on my belt line. And I'm like, so you're carrying 14 mags plus whatever's in your backpack or whatever, and then 1 in the gun? So you need 15 loaded mags on you at all times, like you at all times, right? Keeping in mind that, like, in modern law enforcement engagements, which I'm not saying we should plan off that because we aren't, that's not the scope of the discussion, right? They'll carry like 2 mags because they aren't planning on doing that much shooting. So I try to find somewhere in the middle of all of that, which for me is 2 on my belt line, 4 on the carrier, 1 in the gun. So that's my 7 right there with everything. Could I do more? Yeah, I could add more. Yes, I could also carry a bag with me or something that has additional magazines, but do I feel the need? No, not really, because I at least based off of what I look at in the news and media today, when I gather like area intelligence on what I anticipate here, I don't think that I would need more than that. Because we aren't currently experiencing high levels of violence here in the Metro Detroit area. We're just not. If I lived in the Minneapolis, Minnesota area where people were, starting, fire barrels in abandoned gas station parking lots and turning covered bus station vestibules into walk-in closets that they live and sleep out of or sell for, stolen clothing out of, and seeing bricks thrown through windows and people are breaking into federal law enforcement vehicles and using tow straps to rip open lock boxes in the back of vehicles and steal federally registered firearms. Yeah, I would say I might change my evaluation. Again, that's why I think having some gear and stuff that supports that, where you can scale up or scale down, is a good idea. And I don't want to say it's all about the kit, but I will say it's all about the planning and understanding how to work with a team. So getting away from the kit piece of this, I feel like I have to say that the next two things that, or I'll say the next three things people really should be working on that you almost never see people working on is, first is medical training of some kind, even if it's just a stop the bleed certification, which is really not that hard to go through, not that hard to get, right? But a stop the bleed certification will go a really, really long way in terms of helping your situation out. So if something were to happen at your home or to you out in the world, whatever, and that's aside from conflict, by the way, just in general, medical is going to be good. Medical is going to help you. Additionally from that is some kind of communications, some kind of understanding of how to use modern radios in a way that's going to be helpful and effective for you. Even if that's just understanding like propagation and stuff so that, no, you're not transmitting because you don't have a license right now, right? Just making the assumption. And you can get a Baofeng UV-5R, which is like the cheap go-to Glock 19 of radios. Does everything, but isn't great at anything, right? You can get them plentiful off Amazon with plenty of accessories and things like that to go with it. Spare batteries. You can buy multiple of them and keep them in your vehicle or whatever have you. But knowing how to, jump from frequency to frequency, to scan the emergency channels, to program that device to have those emergency broadcast frequencies captured within that unit and programmed potentially into that one and then multiple others, right? So if you have one in your vehicle, one in your wife's, I don't know about you guys, my parents are getting much older. And if I can go ahead and leave one of those at my parents' house, and all my dad would have to do is turn it on and it's already set to a pre-programmed channel to get that information. Cool. I think that's a major, major advantage. And yes, by the way, in times of emergency, the whole need for a license in order to press the magic transmit button, that goes out the window. In times of emergency and crisis, that rule or that law, is suspended, which people don't seem to know or seem to mention nearly enough. So I try to throw it out there every time I bring up communications, because I think in this community, when we talk about comms, people jump straight from the word radio to peltors mounted on a helmet with my night vision run to a push to talk on my plate carrier. And in reality, it's a much deeper concept than that. And further, right, it depends on the area that you're in, right? So you live out in the country, right? Whatever that means for you, right? And you and your group, right? You guys have to travel great distances in the event you are making a run to a grocery store should something happen, right? You have to understand how to use those radios to cover those great distances, how to potentially bounce off of other antennas and things like that in the area. That's the importance of understanding that skill set. Now, on the reverse side of it, you could be in an urban area and you're not going to go out nearly as far. However, there's more stuff, I guess, bouncing around on the airwaves, different frequencies and things like that. More people, for one. So yes, radio waves, you got Wi-Fi, you've got all kinds of stuff, right? And you need to be able to understand how to work around and work through those issues too, because there's a lot more people, more interference, more opportunities to have your signal broken up, and more problems, right? So that's not to say that you're in a better situation in one or the other. What I'm trying to highlight here is that if you're talking about being capable, effective, prepared, whether that's to communicate with your team on a tactical level or to communicate with your home on a just a straight up communications level, like a safety, a check-in, like whatever, knowing how to work through that is huge. And knowing how to work through that for you and at least one person that you're trying to communicate with it's one of the big misses in our training space is that people spend money on kit that they don't use. Whether that's, you know, oh, I bought an 18-inch Halligan to carry on my back. I'm like, what the fuck are you going to open with that? Like, fucking nothing. But then people will go so far as to buy push-to-talks from places like Disco 32, which that's not poo-pooing the company. They make a fantastic fucking product. It's not their fault that you're irresponsible with your funds. People, you know, you'll drop $100 or $150 on a push-to-talk at Disco 32. You'll spend $600 to $900 or more, right, on some Comtax or whatever, or Sordins, whatever, Liberators, you know, whatever headset, right, that you want to run for communications. You'll throw that up on your, you know, $1,600, $2,000 ballistic helmet and everything, and then you have no idea how to use your comms because you don't train communications. You don't practice communications with anybody else within your training group. You think that the crappy little UV-5R that you have with the crappy little $5 flex antenna that you stuck on your kit because your favorite airsofter showed you how to do it that way, and then you get to a point where you actually have to use this shit and you actually have to understand it, and you can't make it work. And there's no way to contact anyone because communications are down, you know, cell towers down. Shit, we're not even in conflict right now. We just had another outage with Verizon. People were making fun of it on the internet again, because for the amount of money that these mobile service providers make, we still have issues with these like multi-hour, multi-day service outages. And oh, it's okay. We'll give you guys $20 back. Like, yeah, great. Thank you. Cool. That's really going to help given the fact that I couldn't use this device or this service that I pay an assload of money for. But I digress on that as well. Knowing how all this stuff works, knowing how to make it work together, and even beyond that, right? So past basic radio use and radio knowledge, do you have somebody amongst you, or maybe that's you, that can provide a secondary network for some kind of secure communication, whether that's text-based or voice-based, right? So, excuse me, if you're going to set up like a Meshtastic network or a mesh network of some variety where it's a secure text network, right, that exists kind of under the, I'll say like the normal, you know, radio and text band stuff. If you know how to set that stuff up, like, cool, that's super, super fucking valuable. But then you also have to have enough of those mesh nodes either incorporated into your kit or staged somewhere where they can be incorporated into kit so they can work, because all of these devices have a dedicated and I would say almost a fixed range of operation and function. Now, yes, there's devices that can help those things. There's repeaters and stuff like that, but you have to know all those things. You have to understand it. And there's public websites. You can go look up where the repeaters are in your area. I know I have like, there's a bunch of old people that live in my city. So I think we have like 7 repeaters within, I don't know, 25 miles of me. I think I'm about 25 miles of me. And, you know, as long as you have those programmed in, you can jump off those repeaters to reach other folks. It's not you're going to automatically reach them, but you can leverage those for greater range and reach if you don't have like a, you know, 25-foot antenna mounted up to the side of your house running to a high-powered radio setup in your basement or something crazy like that. So there's quite a lot to do there and quite a lot to understand there. And then we get into, finally, right, because this is kind of towards the bottom of the list, is the shooting aspect of this. Everyone, I think, assumes that they're just going to grab a firearm and that's enough of an assumption and a reason that you're going to be prepared. And I think that's not a new concept. I would dare say that existed in the 1700s, in 1776, right, when our country was founded. It was a very real possibility that we were going to lose that war. If you guys go back and study your history, and I get it, we in this country have a huge problem right now with revisionist history, where we go back and we don't like to acknowledge things that actually happened. We like to reframe and rephrase those things and reteach history in a way that's going to make the founders of our country seem like very racist, very entitled, very evil white men. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure in a lot of ways they had their problems. You know, there's certainly documented history, that stuff that we didn't learn about in grade school because you're 7 years old and you probably don't need to know that. And also you can still have a healthy acknowledgement that without the work, dedication, efforts of those men, yes, including their shortcomings, this country probably wouldn't exist. That assumption that simply owning a firearm and knowing how to pull a trigger are enough is very, very damaging. It's one of the things that almost cost us our independence and our freedom, and a lot of men a lot more men, I should say, their lives. There's documented evidence that the lack of training and access to training was one of the earliest identified problems and one of the greatest problems that the colonial army faced was, you know, hey, we got a lot of people who are willing to fight, but they're farmers, they're store clerks, right? They're school teachers, whatever, right? They're not soldiers and never went through conventional training. And the problem is that once you get to that point of conflict, you now have to focus your resources and efforts on fighting at the front, and there's not a whole lot of extra to go around for training additional troops. So while it's not exactly the same now as it was in 76 or, you know, during the Revolutionary War and all that stuff, I'm sorry, the point and the challenge remains the same. So what can we, right, as appropriately concerned, law-abiding, prepared citizens do to help address that? Well, you can go to the fucking gun range and understand how to run a gun, how to use your zero, understand your holds, spend money, invest. I shouldn't even say spend money anymore, because people in this community can spend money with the fucking best of them. We are great at spending money in this community. What we are bad at doing is investing that money. Investing in one good optic over five shitty ones. Investing in one good reliable rifle over five or seven shitty ones. And then you get guys, and I just saw some in another video, I think it was an Orion Training Group video, where Will was talking about his rifle setup. It was like a year or 2 years ago, whatever, an LWRC, which is, yeah, it's a more expensive rifle, and somebody goes, oh, yeah, nice $12,000 rifle setup, and it's like, dude, you could have this. You just want to have a safe full of shitty guns rather than one really, really good functional one. And yeah, I would dare say most people that actually feel the need to drop into comments on videos and stuff online and talk about how people spend too much money on their rifles, just like I got a bunch of shitty comments on a couple of videos I did about a GPR setup. Oh, that you ruined that rifle by adding all that stuff to it. I'm like, so what should I take off here? The laser? Because I run night vision, so I'm not a big fan of passive aiming, especially when my primary optic is a LPVL. Yes, I will passive aim through the RMR that's attached to the top of it. So what am I supposed to take off? The laser? Should I take off the RMR? The white light? Should I take that off? Oh, the suppressor? I should just lose. I've had people tell me you shouldn't run a suppressor. Like, sound and light discipline are apparently not a consideration on the battlefield. Which, it's silly. What that is people who don't have the money or don't want to spend the money or have spent it in stupider ways telling you that you don't need to have the things that they don't have. It's a confirmation bias is the issue, not whether that's an effective fighting rifle or not. And by all means, like, if you can only afford a good quality optic, I don't say only, but a good quality optic, and then, yes, a gun from someplace like Aero Precision or Palmetto State Armory or something like that, make sure it runs, and, you know, improve it where you can as appropriate. So, hey, maybe this thing runs like shit. I need to get a better bolt carrier group or whatever. Make sure it runs, and then get a serviceable optic. If that means no magnification, then so be it. Run a good quality red dot. I would never, ever recommend somebody build in 2026, building a fighting rifle running off irons. Like, this isn't fucking NOM, Smokey. Like, we have the technology, and it's super accessible. There are reliable red dots available out there on the market for sub $300. They come with a mount, they have great battery life, they have good durability, and they are easy to use and understand. Put the little red dot on the target and pull the trigger. I mean, it's pretty much that easy. Now, does that mean you won't have to account for some holds and things at really close distances as well as really far? Like, no, but that's part of the practice. That's part of the training that comes into this. And yeah, if you can, seek out training, professional training and professional guidance from good qualified instructors, because thankfully in 2026, we live in the United States of America where we have training companies owned, ran and staffed by very smart, very good individuals who are fantastic teachers who will teach you how to shoot out to 500 yards with a standard AR package. You know, guys like Buck Doyle, guys like Hunter Freeland, right? Will teach you how to, you know, shoot the shit out of a handgun, right? Guys like Rob Epifania, Will from Orion Training Group, the guys from Core Vision, the list goes on, right? Modern Samurai Project, Achilles Heel Tactical, you know, Rick Crawley and his whole crew there. There's Ian from Rune Nation, right? My buddy Garrett up in New York from Rass Group. The list goes on and on, and I'm leaving off tons of good people. I'm trying to think, you know, Jake and John from Redline Consulting down in Ohio. I'd love to shout out as many friends as I can. But the point I'm making, and I'm sure that you guys can understand here, is there has never been a greater level of free access to information, like, you know, via YouTube and whatnot, than there is today. There has also never been a greater access to paid information than there is today from training companies. Now, yes, we're seeing some training centers kind of fall by the wayside due to mismanagement or lack of business or whatever, and that's a whole different issue that isn't really ours to solve necessarily, other than to say, guys, if you want training centers to stick around, go take classes. You know, you're never going to get everything out of a YouTube video that you could out of a physical class. And believe me, I was somebody who tried, right? Like, I tried to understand and tried to learn, you know, room clearing concepts from YouTube videos. And then I went out and did it in real life in a shoot house with the guys from Orion. And I was like, wow, this is everything I expected it to be, and somehow so much more. You know, until you do some of that stuff in person, you're just never going to know, just like land navigation. And that brings us to a whole nother part of the conversation where we overemphasize, and I'm certainly guilty of this, right? We overemphasize certain skill sets and will demonize the people who want to learn other things. So like I, and a lot of the people I train with, right, we prioritize, you know, flexible search and structure clearance work because we live in really, really suburban areas. Like, I'll tell you guys, I have a single lane driveway. And then once you get past the concrete, there's like maybe 3.5 feet. And it's like, it's the brick wall of my neighbor's house, which sounds like what? A very commercial sized hallway. So a lot of this stuff, a lot of these concepts can be adapted from structure clearance into subdivisions, especially when we're talking about tract housing and things like that. The city that I live in was really exploded in the 50s, right? The whole baby boomer generation and stuff. And yeah, it's streets and streets and streets of subdivisions of house after house that looks very much the same. And that is kind of the same as what you see with office buildings and schools. So in my opinion, you can adapt a lot of that structure clearance work and that tactics to the small unit conversation, right? Versus what a lot of people will say, oh, when everything hits the fan, excuse me, you're going to be out in the woods. Everyone should run out to the woods. You should buy a 14.5-inch rifle because that's the best, because I said so, and you need a 5-day pack and a bunch of M81, and you need to know how to go survive off of MREs and poop in a hole. And it's like, yeah, I mean, hey, hell yeah, man. Go do that. If that's where you live, if there's a perceived or understood functional need for you to be able to, you know, perform those skills on demand, then yeah, dude, go ahead. Like, for that, go do it, man. But what I'm saying is you need to prepare first and foremost for the things that are most likely to happen to you and impact you. I can tell you today, based off of where I live, I don't anticipate a lot, like needing a ghillie suit and a lot of camouflage netting and, you know, being reliant, I guess, off of having to learn how to purify water and survive off the land. There's so much around me. I should be able to survive off a lot of those supplies for an extended period of time. Now, am I saying that knowing how to purify my own water or forage off the land or have stores of food is in any way, shape, or form a bad idea? No, I'm not. I'm not saying that. However, I think people that really put a heavy assertion, heavy credence to that are people that imagine that we're going to go straight from civilized America straight into Red Dawn living in the hills because all of our cities and towns, and I do mean all of them, will be occupied by an invading foreign force. Could it happen? Yeah. And would I be totally screwed with my assumptions if it did happen tomorrow? Yes, I would. Yeah, I'd be hosed in the worst possible fucking way. So, for whatever that's worth, right? But what I'm saying is understand your environment and plan accordingly. Yes, 7 to 9 times out of 10, you're going to experience this scenario. And then, you know, 1 to 3 times out of 10, it could be this other thing. I would say plan and prepare for everything, right? But give more credence and more focus to what you're more likely, like play the numbers, man, what you're more likely to encounter, and then have those other skills. As modern Minutemen, you should try to be well-rounded in almost everything, but that also, again, it comes back to highlighting the importance of having a network, right? Having a group of men who are able to do a lot of those things. So if you did run into a situation like, hey man, we need to purify water, you have a couple guys that are like, yeah, man, I got you. Here, we have these supplies from companies like, you know, like Can of Provisions, right? Good guys making some kits that you can buy pre-assembled for water purification. Once we're through those, hey, do we have some bleach? Okay, here's the measurement. I think it's like one capful per couple gallons or something of potable water, you know, and then you then it's going to be usable or whatever it is, which you can see from there. I've not dedicated that to memory. I have it written down somewhere. There's an opportunity for me to get better. There you go. We talk about this podcast being a learning opportunity, you guys. There you go. If you don't know that, look that up, commit that to memory. There's an opportunity to get better today in about 3 minutes because you can look that up on Google pretty fucking easy. Like we talked about with med, hey, do I have to be a certified EMT or have a degree and be a doctor? No, I don't. But if I have guys around me that are and can help show me those things and I'm serviceable and functional in those regards, then I think I'm doing enough of my job. And then as everyone comes together, you have that synergy effect, right? Where the sum of the parts, right, is greater than the sum of adding them together. I just fucked that up completely. But you understand what I'm saying, right? There's value in numbers that have a diversified set of skills. And that's where we need to hold ourselves accountable, A, to maintain our own skill set. You have to be your own. It's kind of like being your own salesperson, your own advocate, right? As you're going to sell yourself to a training group, which is why, like I've said before in the radio discussions we've done here on the podcast, right? If you have radio skills, like you're like an Austin Joe Miller, if you're like one of the guys from Mojave Repeater, which Austin works with them, right? If you're like the guy we have here, David, he's a wonderful, very nice man who set up like our ATAC through a VPN and mesh network, all that shit, right? And you have those skills, you're like a unicorn, bro. You will have zero problems getting into any training group unless you're just the world's like largest, floppiest asshole, you know, because you have an expertise and a skill set that almost nobody else has and people aren't dying to get. Everybody wants to be an assaulter on a team. I just want to go to the range and shoot and be really good at that. Nobody wants to sit at a desk and fuck with a radio and be the nerd of the group that understands the propagation and the relays and all this stuff that comes into it and power and you know, how to improvise hasty antennas and things like that. Those people never have a problem finding their way into a group unless they have a very serious problem, you know, interpersonally. Like I said, they're like unicorns. You should capture it and try to figure out how to replicate it. So more of us have radio people in our groups. But you have to, if you have that, you basically sell yourself. That's how valuable that skill is. Just like if you're somebody with a high level of experience with combat medicine, you know. But if you're one of these other people that has a skill that's kind of common, you have to maintain that skill. You have to hold yourself accountable. Am I dry practicing? Am I working on checking out my kit, shaking out my kit, changing out my batteries on a regular basis? Okay, do I understand when and why I have to do those things? Do I understand how to store certain things like ammo and food and whatnot so that it's not going to deteriorate and have issues over time, right? Because that's part of the problem with stored dried goods is that, excuse me, if you don't store them correctly and air and moisture get in, that food will go bad. And then you'll be really, really fucked when you need to go, you know, open that container that you bought from Costco for $60 and go get that food, right? But I digress. And, you know, if you're a mechanic, right? Or if that's what you're selling yourself as to the group is, yes, I can fight, you know, so then you do have to do the flat range work. But I'm a mechanic by trade, and I understand, you know, I understand and have the tools, right, to maintain modern vehicles, because the newer a vehicle is, the more electronics it has in it, which is why some people love the older Land Cruisers and stuff like that. excuse me. But you see what I'm saying? Like, you have to be your own advocate. You have to sell yourself to your group of your peers until you're well integrated, right? But you have to hold yourself accountable. And I think letting stuff lapse on the flat range and that false sense of security is where more people that want to adopt this modern Minuteman persona fall short than anything else. Like how many times a year do you go to the range? And if it is less than like 10, I would say like at least once a month, it was what you should be aiming for at least. Right. If it's less than that, like, man, what are you fucking doing? Like, all the tactics work and all the training you may do on structure clearance or small unit tactics or whatever the fuck, you know, drawing from concealment and everything, if you're not actually putting those skills into practice and into test, you're still missing so much, right, in terms of validating that skill set, growing that skill set. If you're just going out and you, maybe you're doing structure clearance work, you know, every couple of weeks you're coming out to a place like what we have up here in Michigan, which we're trying to grow that relationship. We've, you know, trying to have some issues there. You got to fight for those relationships. You have to. That's where we're at right now with things. And you're going out, you're doing a lot of stuff. Cool. One of the greatest problems that we find with structure clearance is guys want to go fast, right? Oh, we got to go dynamic because your favorite former military action guy, right? From whatever, whether it was from CAG or the SEALs or your favorite Ranger or a really handsome Green Beret told you that, you know, we do everything dynamically. So you want to go fast, but you should only be going as fast as you can process and effectively shoot. And when you frame that comment, when you frame that question in the context of how quickly can you move and accurately shoot on the flat range, whoa, you need to slow way the fuck down. You go, man, if you are good at introspection, you're going to be honest with yourself and you're going to go, I'm going way too fast. Now, think about what that number looks like if you're never on the flat range to practice moving and shooting. When you look at how fast some of these guys that run two-gun and three-gun matches run around from section to section, engaging targets around corners, through portholes, and what have you, right? They're fucking flying, dude, because that's where competition shooting comes into the mix and can be very, very valuable. Knowing how to control your weight, knowing how to balance, knowing how to make good, solid points of connection with your rifle platform to be accurate and have a small, tight group. And some of that stuff's gear related. You know, I moved from a vertical grip to just a little finger stop or whatever. And just with the way my body works and the input into that rifle, you know, shout out to Stuffs and Pews for the guidance on that stuff. My group closed up probably about a good inch. And that's not a lot, but just by making a gear change, like, that's actually kind of a lot and noticeable too. So I say that stuff to just point out, if you're not practicing these skills and then practicing them in ways that you can compound them together, you're doing yourself a disservice. We talk about being the modern Minuteman. I think being a modern Minuteman in terms of what a Minuteman was in the 1700s, that's a really, really low bar. Again, we almost lost that fucking war because with the false sense of security we had as civilians, that ownership of a rifle and knowing how to hunt for small game to feed your family was enough. We lulled ourselves into security, and then when it was time to fight for our freedom, we as a country almost fucking failed. So you have to police yourself on that, and you have to constantly, what I would say is, question whether you're doing enough in the right places. Like, hey, am I going to the gym? Like, I get that comment all the time. Hey, man, you guys need to lose the weight. And I get it. I'm trying to build muscle. And I had somebody tell me recently, oh, you shouldn't even worry about building muscle until you can be, I think they said, until you can be consistent enough and start dropping weight. And I'm like, well, yes, but also no, because I think that being strong is important. I understand you want me to look like certain people out there on the internet. Would I love to look and be in the same shape as like Jared and Jason and some of these other guys out there? Like, sure, I'd fucking love that stuff. And I need to figure that out. You know, I'm not saying that it's wrong, but to say stop working out altogether and just, you know, starve yourself for 18 hours out of the day so that you can drop weight, you're going to be way less fucking effective. You really fucking are. And that's why, you know, I think to a degree, when you look at dudes who were, you know, we see this stuff shared around the internet of like operators from the 80s and 90s with Delta and things like that, they looked like accountants and bankers and stuff, which no big deal. Definitely work in finance, so I'm pretty close, you know what I'm saying? But really, they weren't the most jacked up, big body dudes you've ever seen. Now you see that this is like a thing where guys are getting so big and so muscular. And we just had Bully from Almost Covert on in our last discussion, where he even said, hey, I was totally jacked. I was totally ripped. I had no fucking mobility. My legs blew up a mile into a 6 mile or 5 mile ruck. I couldn't pan doors in structure clearance because my hip flexors and everything, like my mobility was just completely fucked because I was too big. So it's a fine line you kind of have to walk with the fitness, but like, are you doing enough for your fitness? Are you doing too much with that and putting yourself in a poor position and being unable to perform? And then you have a finite number of hours in a day and time to invest into your skills, whether that's developing those skills, maintaining them, right? So you're not getting any better, but you're also not getting any worse, right? Or learning new skills, right? So it's a balance, right? Because unless you're law enforcement or military, which is a totally different scope than this conversation dictates for. You have 8 hours out of the day, typically 9 hours out of the day that you're working, right? 4 hours in the morning, an hour for lunch, and 4 hours in the evening. So that's 9 hours right away, plus 8 hours of sleep, usually. So right there, you're at 17 hours, meaning that you have 7 hours left in the day, and then you got to do family shit. Like, it is a tough grind. I'm not trying to take that away from fucking anyone. I'm just trying to put it in perspective when we have this conversation. We all want to be... We all want to be that modern minute man. We all want to be well-rounded. We all want to be the guy from the movie who just has the background and experience and the knowledge to just rattle off everything and know how to do all kinds of stuff and how to improvise, I don't know, how to improvise a claymore out of a bottle of hand soap. I don't fucking know, right? Like, we all want to know that stuff. But the reality is you're going to be good at, you know, 2, 3, 4 things, and then you need a team around you. And that's where the strength in numbers comes in and why being a singleton operator fucking sucks balls. And if you don't have a group of people, even if it's only one or two guys, if you don't have a group of people you can call in the events of something going sideways, I'd say maybe you should spend more time working on that and less time working on something else. Go hang out at your local gun shop. Spend more time online trying to connect with people. They seem a little weird. Hey, let's go out for a beer before we go out to the range so I can get to know you, and then I'll make the decision if I want to go shoot with you. I did that several times with guys that I was like, hey, we all want to get together and shoot. We all want to be better prepared men to take care of our families and our communities. Let's get together. Let's, you know, break some bread and figure out what's what. And yep, we had to make that decision. I told that story. Why do I feel like I told that story recently? At any rate, like, we dismissed a few guys from it. Like, we didn't like look at them and go, you are the weakest link. Goodbye. You've not passed our qualification. No, it was just, hey man, we created a separate group chat and they weren't in it. And it's like, look, this is realistically where I see myself being able to be successful. It's not personal. And that's a big part of it, right? But then you have to start working together, like, a lot to develop the trust, the belief, right? The trust, the reliability that when you go to do something like, hey, we have to go clear our way through a grocery store to get, you know, Oreos and vegetables, I trust you to be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there, and we can work together seamlessly as a group. That kind of cohesion takes a lot of time and effort. I would say, like, right now, I don't even know if I have a full 5, 6 people I would really, really trust. I have maybe 2 or 3 that I would really trust to do that shit. Like, maybe. And that's just be either because we've not spent enough time together training, or those other, there are other individuals that I work with that just, they say they're serious about it. And all I actually want to do is go create content for the gram, which is a whole other pitfall we've fallen into in this community. And, if I had to name 2025 as the year of fill in the blank, for me personally, 2025 would have been the year of the bullshit influencer. You know, guys I've come across, hey man, like, they call everyone brother is one big telltale sign, but that's also a cultural thing. I'm not hating on it. They will show up to train. They will make mistakes, which is good because you should make mistakes. It's how you fucking learn. But then they never fix them. And then they're like, oh, let me move my camera before we run the next rep. And it's like, are you thinking about a camera angle right now? Or are you, thinking about the repetition, where you should be, where your responsibility is, how to swap angles when you need to with this guy because you need to pick up what he has to drop to get through clearing this room? Or, you know, hey, are you at home dry firing? And are you dry firing to create reels for social media? Or are you dry firing to solve your own problems? Now, you can do both. Like, I'm not saying that it's not mutually exclusive. Let me be very clear about that, you know, because I do that kind of shit, right? I'm not hating on it. But I'm just asking, like, when you meet people like that, are they doing it for the right reasons? Because that's the problem with the social media stuff. It's the number one way to connect with people, to be more prepared as a group, right? As we build out groups of these modern Minutemen, it's very difficult to vet some of these people because they can appear to be very dedicated. They can appear to be very well-read. They can present themselves in a very certain and distinct light. And then when you get to know them and get to work with them, oh, this guy's a fucking serial liar. He lies about fucking everything. Half of his kit is fake, which in some instances, like, you can look at it and go, oh, well, you run a fake plate carrier. Like, I don't fucking care if your shit fails, it's your problem. On the other hand, if they're running fake optics and lasers, you're like, well, I can't depend on you because on the range at any time, well, let alone out in the world doing stuff, your shit could fail. your optic could just die and you have to swap out a battery, which happens, but it could fail and not hold zero anymore. It could fail and never turn back on. And then you don't have irons on your gun because your favorite seal doesn't run irons, and you set your gun up not based off of what's going to work for you, but based off of what this guy fucking told you to do. And yes, some of that stuff does help. Like I said, like Will Stuffs and Pews on Instagram shared some stuff that really helped me, but I made the change. I tried it and I went out to the fucking flat range to try that out and make sure it actually did help me. And if it didn't, I would just go back to what I had before. You know what I'm saying? But we have these people out here, these influencers who really, they talk the talk, but they do not walk the walk, right? They go spend money on gear. They will, you guys know the whole, we don't need to like dive down that rabbit hole per se, right? We know that there's people out there that say one thing and then do another, or say one thing and do nothing is more apt, right? And it's for that reason that I think it feeds into the greater issue that we have in this community with, like I said, I've said it so many times in this discussion. We have that false sense of security. Like, I've had people tell me, they go, man, I train way more than most people, almost to the point of it being a derogatory comment towards me in a message or a comment section or a voice message I get or whatever. And it's like, almost like, dude, I train more than you. You should listen to me. Or, you know, hey, thanks for what you said, but I train a lot. So like, no thanks. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, if you got it figured out, man, by all means. But like, how come we never see your hits on targets? How come you're never shooting steel so we can hear the hits? How come you don't use a shot timer so we can see if you speed up videos or something? You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like the stated purpose for so many people is preparedness, but the actual purpose is for personal gain. And again, you can do both, and I'm not fucking hating on it, but personal accountability, and you have to demand that accountability of yourself, as well as that's what, like, I've people, you know, I had this problem when I was in marching music, right? Like, early on in my life, high school and up till the time I was 22 as a performer and stuff, people did not like me. I demanded accountability of myself. And then because I was working that, at least that hard, I demanded that accountability of the people around me. People straight up in high school, I remember people were like, hey, don't go talk to him. He's a fucking asshole. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, you don't even fucking hear you, right? And at first I was like really put off by it. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? Yeah, I am. I am a fucking asshole because I demand better of the people around me. We're all here supposed to be putting in the same effort and the same work. If I can fucking do it, why can't you? And it's not a question of can or can't, it's will or won't. So then I started looking at it that way and go, why won't you fucking put the time in? Now, when I go through and I do, you know, we do CQB training on Thursday nights at Battlefield CQB in Westland. So shout out to Nelson, shout out to Tim, the owners there that let us in to do that and have let us in to do that, right? And I show up and people are dropping doors, they're dropping areas of responsibility. They're squeezing two guys in the space, in the firing lane of one person. And I'm like, why the fuck after 6 to 8 months or 12 months of doing this shit, you know, every week or every other week, how do you still not fundamentally understand how the fuck you enter and clear a corner fed room or a center fed room, right? How do you still not understand your angles of exposure? How do you not understand, small unit tactics, right? How do you still not know the hand signals for a file or a split file or a diamond or a wedge or whatever? Like, how do you not know that stuff? Like, if it's your first time or your second time or your third time, like, hey, I get it. There's a learning curve. I get it. But if you're doing this, you know, you're in the double digits and you're not retaining information, you're making the same mistakes. And what's fucking worse, and you see this a lot in this community, is guys will make jokes to shrug it off, or they'll fucking want to sit there and argue with you with it. I've tried so many times to teach guys locally. Hey, I want to learn how to clear rooms. I was like, cool, come on out with us. We're learning it together. We're working on it together. There's a handful of us that went and took some classes. We'll all give each other pointers. It's not a class. It's a very like collaborative. It's a very collaborative experience. And then you go do the damn thing and people want to fucking fight with you. Well, I think you should do it this way. Well, that doesn't work because of this. Well, what if? Dude, you can what if the fuck out of anything. And if that's what you're here for, like, you just might as well give up now. Because you're never going to find a 100% airtight solution to almost any problem in the tactical or preparedness space. In any space, actually. That's called life, dude. That's like being an adult. But guys will want to do that because they'll want to sit there and they'll want to disprove you and they'll want to be on the same intellectual level with you in terms of like experience and knowledge on the subject. And it's like, look, I'm not saying you're any less a man for not knowing how to do this. Like, you're more so. a man because you came out to try to learn these things to protect your family and maybe, and you enjoy it because it is fun and stuff, right? But then you can't swallow your ego to just learn how to fucking do it. And then you won't spend the money to come take a class from the people that come teach it. So like, I am genuinely, you know, concerned what you're actually here for. And then you do things that are just like huge no-nos. You won't use your safety on the range. You then brag about it later, you know, and you have a fundamental understanding of shooting. I had a guy tell me, he's like, well, you know, staccato makes you a better shooter. I was like, I would disagree with that. I said, I would say it makes it easier for you to overcome certain issues with performance-based shooting. He goes, yeah, like I said, it makes you a better fucking shooter. Like, no, because if you have bad habits, it's just going to mask them in some situations, in some contexts. And then if you transition or have to transition to a different firearm, you're just going to be a horrible shot. So, like, I'm not saying that you shouldn't run a staccato, and I'm not saying that a staccato isn't a fantastic firearm. I think it is. If I could afford one, I would totally run the shit out of a staccato. But I think there's value, and I think most good handgun trainers, right? So Scott from Modern Samurai, again, Hunter from Hunter Freeland Shooting, any of these guys, right? They would tell you, like, good fundamentals are good fundamentals. And that's why they'll bounce back and forth from running a Glock to running a staccato or running a Vanta or whatever. And good fundamentals have to be present. They have to be consistently present so that you can perform at that consistently high level that we're all striving to get to. If you think you're going to buy your way out of a problem and just throw money at it, you're not nearly as prepared as you think. That's become a huge issue in this community because marketing is just a huge thing in the 2A space, the hunting space. And like, hey, look, I'm going to SHOT Show next week. Like, I get it. But if you're truly trying to become a prepared individual, it's less about the fancy gear and more about what's between the ears. It really is. And we've talked about so much different stuff. Like, we're already over an hour here on this, and I feel like we could go for potentially, right, another hour easily talking about where people miss this stuff, why they don't understand it, why the whole concept of being a prepared, you know, quote unquote, modern Minuteman is one of, in my opinion, it's one of the most misunderstood concepts out there, but it's one of the sexiest ideas and used for marketing by companies to get people to think that they need to have certain pieces of gear. They need to run it a certain way. Everyone wants to emulate the guy that they see doing it well, you know, and hey, cool. I get it. I don't hate the hustle, but I think that there can be more done both by us as consumers and prepared individuals, as well as influencers and strong personalities out there in our space to close the gap on those two things. Like, and I think some people do a really good job of trying to share that point. I think other people don't. I think they want people to go buy their gear. They, you know, for obviously it's a business for them. Hey, go buy our gear, go buy our sling, go buy whatever, you know, and, you'll be better because of this. And it's, they don't come out and say that, but it's implied, right? Because look how good I shoot and I use this gear. So people go out and they buy it. And then the new kids show up on the block and they can also, they do really, you know, high speed shooting drills and stuff and really good editing to their media. And it looks attractive and it allures people in. And then they go spend a bunch more money on that gear and that kit when what they had works fine. I'm not saying like you're a bad person for doing that. I've fucking done that for, you know, God's sake, but in the conversation around your level of individual preparedness, focus on what matters. Build yourself up and have the equipment that's going to support that mission. You know, do it smartly. Do your research. I think one of the biggest misses, we talked about this early on, you know, gather information. What do you most likely anticipate to be the violence that you encounter, right? And then plan accordingly for that. If you're not doing any information gathering, if you don't have any feelers out, you don't know certain places in your city where you can go to get the scoop on what's going on in the city. Like, there's a coffee and cheesecake shop here in my city that the owner talks forever, but he tells you fucking everything. Super nice guy too, and the cheesecake is very good. So is the coffee. But like, I know I can go in there, and at any time I can get the what's what on what's going on. You know what I mean? And there's a couple of places in town that are like that, where you just make friends with those centers of influence, right? Where everyone comes in and talks to them because they're tied into what's going on locally, and they, you know, cops come in and city council people are in and talking to them and stuff, and they're a business owner, so they're glad handing with everybody. Like, cool. Now you know, you have at least some high level idea of what's going on in your AO, and you can plan for that, and you can adjust your planning for that as a modern civilian, as a modern Minuteman of sorts. So if this was helpful, please, guys, smash the subscribe button. Leave a good rating if you're on Spotify. You know, any of that stuff really does help us out. But I hope that this discussion, more than anything, was beneficial to you. Because like I said, as things change from year to year, I want to talk more on these things. I feel like over the last several years, even though maybe the last two decades, maybe not that much, but definitely the last decade, we've only seen tensions in this country continue to rise. Now, they ebb and flow a little bit. It's not a straight up or a, you know, a straight line. There's ups and downs to that, but like we've seen a lot of tension, and that tension, if not tempered at any point, there's a really good potential, very strong potential for violence. And if we want to be prepared as law-abiding citizens to protect our families and those around us, our neighbors and our communities, we have to be aware of these things, and we have to be honest with ourselves when we're going through the training iterations where we allocate our money and our time and our mindset. So thank you guys so much for hanging out and listening to this while I am getting away from like the sub-teen weather. It's going to be like 15 degrees all the week that this drops anyways. I'll be in the 70-degree desert out in Las Vegas, Nevada, checking out SHOT Show. I think there's a lot of good stuff that's supposed to be coming out this year. So we'll see. Some of it seems kind of gimmicky. I know, I think HoloSun teased like 5 new optics. They're all just like bigger windows, better windows. And I'm like, dear God, guys, like seriously, like the 507 comp wasn't enough. Now they have like the Pro Max or whatever. It's even bigger. They have like a rifle red dot that has a laser built into it. Kind of like a Wilcox Boss, I think. Oh, there's a new unit from L3 that's being dropped for night vision. I think OpsCore has a different helmet that's coming out. There's always this kind of stuff, right? Like, that's literally the point of SHOT Show. But I've never really been, so I don't know. I don't know what's going to be out there. But I am really looking forward to it. Like the vacation away from the cold weather, really, really going to enjoy that. Although we're boarding our dogs for the very first time, and I'm. I'll be honest with you guys, I love my fucking dogs. I know I bitch about my wife's dog a lot, but like I love those two, and I'm very concerned for how it's going to go. I think we found a really good place, but it's not going to stop me from worrying. You know what I mean? Like, dogs are our absolute best friend. It crushes me having seen friends in the community. You know, Joe from Bruiser Industries, I think he lost his dog very recently. Hunter Freeland, another guy who's been a guest on the podcast, his dog was very ill recently, and it's like, dude, that shit just like crushes me up, man. I feel it. I do. I really do. And it's just wild to me. We still have people for all the things that the cool shit that dogs do for us in law enforcement and military. You still get motherfuckers out there that hate dogs. I've got a buddy that comes over. He fucking bitches up and down when my dogs come anywhere near him. I'm like, dude. Okay, well, you sat down, like, on the couch where he was sitting with a plate of pizza. What did you fucking think was going to happen? Yes, he's going to be, like, up in your grill. Why don't you sit at the bar counter over here with some stools where he can't get you? Like, or just push him away. It's not that big of a fucking deal. Like, stop bitching out loud, man. Like, they're dogs. But I digress. Like I fucking love my dogs, and I'm sure it's all going to be fine, but, I will have a lot to share with you guys when I return. I expect it to be a really good trip. You know, my wife's going to be with me. We have some meetings set up. I feel so official. You know, I feel like a real influencer now, 'cause I have meetings and appointments set up at SHOT Show with companies and stuff like that. And, certainly looking forward to connecting with a few fellas that I've made contact with in over the last 5.5 years. And now for the very first time, people who I look to for guidance and help and just good old fashioned, you know, fun communication and whatnot, I'm actually going to meet these dudes in real time, in person and everything. It's going to be super, super cool. And I fucking love Vegas. I don't gamble, but I love the atmosphere. Everyone's there having a good time. The weather is usually dry and sunny, which is fucking awesome for me. So thank you guys so much for hanging out. Leave a comment on this if you think that I missed anything or you disagree with my perspective on it. Would love to open up the dialogue for the conversation. Shoot me a message on Instagram or YouTube. Like I said, we got the video out there for the slick plate carriers. We got videos on building rifles and handguns and mindsets and perspective around all of that shit. So let me know what you guys think, man. I want to hear from you. Give us some feedback. Engage in some... positive discussion. So that's all I got for you guys for this week's episode. Thank you so much for hanging out. Again, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any of these as we drop them every week, and then a dedicated sit rep episode, I'm sorry, on Sundays, the beginning of every month. But that is all for me, you guys. I will catch you all after SHOT Show. Stay safe and warm out there. And until next time, you guys, like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.